It's this afternoon. We're expecting a large class of students to arrive, many of whom will want to speak here at the commission in about 45 minutes. So maybe we should just find out now if any of those who have been waiting would like to give a presentation to the commission. Maybe I should just, we have a little time, tell you again that my name is Tom Berger, and this is the Alaska Native Review Commission, and that my job is to go around the state of Alaska to every region and to all the villages and the urban centers, and to find out what Alaska Natives have to say about ANCSA, about the Claims Act. What's happened since 1971? How has it worked out? What about 1991, the issue relating to the sale of shares, question of taxation of land, the right of Native children born since 1971 to participate in the settlement, and what about the issue of Native government? We've been hearing in many places now, including meetings we had at Anchorage, as well as in some of the villages, we've been hearing about these questions from people who've spoken to the commission since late February, when we began these meetings and hearings. So here we are at the University of Alaska, and we had quite a few students and one member of the faculty speak this morning, and you're welcome to participate this afternoon. I'd only ask you to come up to one of these microphones and be seated and just tell me what your views are. Your statements will be recorded and typed up so that there will be a permanent record of what's said, and the report that I'm going to write about this will be out next year, and it'll be based on the record of the testimony at these meetings and hearings. So that's briefly put why we're here this afternoon, and some of you that weren't here this morning, whether you're university students, whether you come from Fairbanks or one of the other communities in the area, or whether you're native or non-native, you're welcome to participate. And if you'd like to, we'll take a few minutes now to invite you to come up and say your piece. Well, before I cajole and entice, I just wait and see if that works. Then comes the cajoling and enticing, and if you're looking forward to that, I wouldn't be too certain that it'll turn out well. Okay. Yes, Mr. Luke.
Well, I've got a lot to say, but to make it short, I'd like to listen to the other people first. And the main thing I'd like to say is we've been promised so many years now for things, and we ain't seen nothing yet. And therefore, I'd like to see people start speaking up now. Now is the time to do it. And I'd like to see it done now. This not right now, but I mean so we can get together and not try to bug each other. What we should do is just gradually try to be friends and all that, you know, so we don't argue among each other. So this, what I'm thinking about the Tana Chief, you know, they've been promising us these things for years. And I ain't seen nothing yet. I've got a homestead down there, but I mean, what about the other people? They want land, and and the young generation, like I'm teaching the students right now, a lot of them ask me, they ask me, say, what should I do, Howard? Shall I go through college or study the culture? One of them told me that. I said, well, what your dad told you? Well, she told me, he told me, well, you're 18 years old now. He says, you take up anything you want. And that's not the right thing to say. So she asked me, and I told her. I said, if I were you, I said, I'd take up college and get through the thing. And then gradually, like I'm talking to you, I says, you take that up, and you can gradually pick up your culture. That culture you can it'll be nothing to pick up. I says, just like, you see, I make a bunch of stuff, and I just show them how it's done and how they use drive moves and what you do if your gun get jammed and all that sort of stuff and your luck and all that sort of stuff. I made up that stuff and I showed them so they'll know. And that's stuff that they should do is get through their college, then take up the culture. And I don't know, you probably do a good job when you're going around these villages, I hope.
I hope so too.
Yeah. But I don't know how you're going to do it, though. There's a lot of older people, and how are they going to understand you and stuff like that? That's what I'm more.
Well, in the villages, in some of the villages, of course, we've had interpreters that the local village has chosen, and they've made sure that everybody understands what's being said. And we found that the elders have participated in the meetings, and they've said their piece, and so have the younger people too. So that's worked out quite well so far. Mr. Luke, I don't know whether you said so, but I understand that you're the elder in residence here at the University of Alaska.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been promised so many times. I mean, see, I gave the elders 5 acres down there to build a hall down there so they can have potlatches, and when their family passed away or something like that, they can have potlatches and stuff. And the Tanana chief, we had a meeting down there in June, down there, all the elders, we got together, and it passed, and they said we'll have it for you next year, and that's been a year and a half ago, and we ain't seen nothing yet. And I talked to Mike Irwin about a month ago, and he said, I didn't know nothing about it. There you go, you see, they don't bring that stuff up there. Something that's, I don't know, there's something funny in there. Like the other day, they had some kind of a meeting in town, and I didn't know nothing about it. It was something about the land. They should have a piece in the paper in there or something. I didn't see nothing. They never, and that's what gets me there. They're just doing it themselves. And we've got the right to they're supposed to listen to us. The Tanana chief and Dion, they're supposed to listen to the elders. And they just go on and do it themselves. That ain't right. And I've talked to people, and I'm gonna see that they're going to start to pay attention. That ain't right what they're doing. And that's about all I got to say. Maybe later on I might dream something up tonight.
Fine. Okay, well, we'll look forward to that.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Marie Head, and I was born in Fort Yukon, Alaska. And I just like to share some of the disappointment I do feel about ANCSCA and its implementation. I was raised in the States, so I was down in Idaho when it first went through in 1971. But I got the forms, and I was able to sign up myself and my four children. And I was pretty happy, and I had expectations of money and of land, but that was my main thing that I looked forward was to having some land and some property to live here in Alaska, because I always longed to come back to my people and to my home. And I traveled all pretty much over the states, but I never found a place that I felt at home at, except maybe on the Lackawanna Reservation, where I had some real close friends. But when I did come back up here in 1975, I found out that, you know, all the land was, it could not be given to individuals. That was a big disappointment to me. And now Fort Yukon has a lottery where you can, people's names are drawn and you can get land, but it still costs money. And what small portion of claims money I did get was spent down in Idaho. And now I don't have the money to even participate in the lottery, because I'm going to school now and all my money is going for education. And so that is a real big disappointment to me, that I signed up in the regional corporation and in the village for the main purpose of getting land. And that's what, you know, I thought ANCSA was supposed to be about, was Alaska Native Settlement. But now when you look at it, it's set up along the corporate lines. It's not a settlement to the Alaska Natives. It's a settlement to people who work and people who have, you know, high technical abilities. And those are not Natives. I think that if Congress is going to set up an Alaska Native Settlement Act, that settlement should go to the Natives, land and money, and for always. It shouldn't be diverted, and if they're going to divert it, they should rename that Alaska Native. It should not be Alaska Native. It should be named to people that it's going to now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Head. Oh, yes.
My name is Mike Smith, and I'm enrolled in a village corporation and a regional corporation. I don't know, I guess I'd like to start with maybe just a few of the assumptions that Congress was making back then and some of the effects that they would have. I think when Congress first started and they put the 20-year moratorium on the stocking of the nation, was a good idea, but it was a little, not really effective. There's figures now that say 29% of all stock that had been given out through inheritance has already gone into non-native hands. The state has attached a number of shares of stock for support, for non-support or non-payment of child support payments. But I guess the 20-year moratorium, the most drastic effect it had was the simple fact that Congress was assuming that in 20 years, the natives of Alaska were going to be able to change their lifestyles and their values, which is a change that they had been fighting for over 200 years. I just don't understand how Congress was thinking that they were going to be able to change it. It's, you know, as we all know, once you start breaking people into classes, you get frictions. I think one of the number one things about the land claims was that it was not a racially defined piece of legislation. It was politically defined, and I think that's one of the things that get lost in the red tape, so to speak. Another assumption is that Congress made was that the corporation, you know, one of the most efficient vehicles that the Western world could come up with, the corporation was going to be able to be adapted to the native lifestyle. The corporation in itself mandates that certain values and certain importance people put on certain values have to be changed in order to please the corporation. We all know that in order to be an effective corporation, you have to be able to compete in the real world. And the real world says that real world corporations say that there ain't no room for heritage, there ain't no room for culture, there ain't no room for any distinction amongst in the corporation. It's inefficient. It has no room within the corporate world. So when you start mixing corporations with culture and heritage and stuff, it's going to take a lot more than 20 years to accomplish. As we're seeing now, the corporations and the IRAs are vying for power in the state, and that's something else that came out, not directly, but came out of ANCSA, because it did set up a corporation. I could see where it was the only vehicle available to them at the time, but I think there's room for change within itself, and I think that through some fancy manipulation we can be able to work out the problems that have arisen on account of ANCSA. I'm a new father. I had a little kid born yesterday, and
congratulations.
So, and but you know, and I never really worried about the quote non-natives until yesterday. my little girl is now considered a non-participant, and that is, you know, and that's directly because of the corporations. The native people from the village aren't going to kick her out because she's not native, and my family ain't going to kick her out because she ain't native or nothing. But the corporate structure is going to kick her out. Everything, 200 years of culture and everything have been bottled up in this corporate structure now. And it's, you know, that's what we have here in the state. You know, 200 years of history of culture, thousands of years of history and culture, what I'm saying, 200. Bottled up, put into this little thing called a corporation with no room for expansion to involve natives born after there, no room for the preservation of culture. We've seen already major corporations having financial problems. They're not going to be able to support cultural or heritage values without jeopardizing themselves. Our leadership was not well prepared for the role of corporate managers. However effective they were pre-ANCSA in as politicians, maybe they were great, but as corporate managers, well, they're not so good. Some had some business experience beforehand, but for the most part it was small village-orientated businesses. It was not a business operated on the magnitude of worldwide corporations, as will ANCSA corporations become, simply because their resources. I don't know. I lost track. I was going to write this all out, but maybe I'll do that in a couple of days. Thank you.
Yeah, just one question, Mike. Just for the record, are you a student here?
No, not this semester. I was last semester, but I took this one off to have my kid, and I had to get some logs to build a house. And also, matter of fact, I got the logs from a native allotment.
I see.
My mom's. So, but I will be going back next fall, mm-hmm. and I expect to. I have some things I want to do in my life, and in order to help those along, I have to. You know, I got to get that piece of paper that says it's Greek. I was I overheard a remark the other day, which was, I don't know, it was from a corporate leader to a lady that had gone to school and the corporation had sent her and stuff. And the corporate leader said, and the young gal was speaking up, saying what she felt about it, about something, and the corporate leader said, well, you know, who are you to tell us what, you know, we sent you to school and everything, and then you come back and try to tell us what to do. Well, you know, that's the kind of thing that is very prevalent in leadership. Through lack of experience coupled with the infusion of wealth and resources and power behind those wealth and resources, without any good experience, leads to that type of management feelings. I know personally, maybe I got a little bit of intelligence, and I know, I don't know if, but I can't get nothing out of the leaders. I don't know if I threaten them or what, but they don't have a tendency to listen, and I think they're just inadequate to perform the tasks that ANCSA put on them. Fortunately, I see a lot of students up here at the university who are well on their way to taking over those positions, and I'm involved in a program that basic aim is to provide management skills for corporations. But, you know, that's it. I'll talk to you a couple more days.
Okay, thank you. Sit down, please.
My name is Starlet Patterson, and I'm kind of nervous.
Well,
I'm an at-large member of the Bristol Bay Native Corporation, and I've lived in Fairbanks since 1971 when I started attending the university here. When I enrolled, I was 17 years old.
Enrolled in Bristol Bay?
Yes, in a Native corporation.
Mm-hmm.
I was told to sign a piece of paper, which I did. You know, being 17, you know, I don't think they educated the people enough as to what was going on, especially the younger people who are now stepping up into positions where they can maybe get into the corporation and be corporate leaders or whatever. But I feel they forgot the at-large members there. You know, they made this classification of people who, if you weren't residing in a village at the time, they automatically put you in the at-large region. And then I guess they had they went back and said, well, you can change and go into a village, but they didn't publicize this or make it known to all the members. And I feel, you know, then they had a deadline again in that past. I don't mind being in a large member because I don't feel like very many people are benefiting anyway, whether they're at large or village. And I think that there should have been, you know, more publicity, more meetings before they got involved in, you know, they just did it real quickly, and I understand there were deadlines and it was the right time for Congress and all this stuff, but they overlooked a lot of things. They overlooked the newborns. They overlooked people, you know, Native people, real Native people, getting the land, having your own land, which is really important to our culture. You know, there's lots of people without any land, or you know, some people were fortunate to get the Native allotments in the 1904 Act, but there's hundreds and hundreds of people who don't have land, and their own village corporations are charging them outrageous amounts of money to lease for 50 years. And, you know, I feel that there's been misconception for the Native people. There's only certain people benefiting, and it's kind of sad, and we're at a real critical point where, you know, 1991 is coming up. I don't think our people realize that we're at a critical point, and, you know, I think that should be looked into. And, you know, I think the corporations should try to make an attempt to make the people more aware. They're having a movement now, but I don't think they should put more into it. They're losing a lot of the culture, and that goes with corporations, I guess. But my two biggest concerns are land and what to do with the afterborns, or they're natives too, you know. There are children, and it didn't stop at 1971.
Thank you, Ms. Patterson. Thank you. Didn't take any coaxing.
Coaxing? Cajoling? My name is Adeline Raboff, and I did present a written statement to the commission in Anchorage, but I'd just like to reiterate here one point here. That is that if you do this review commission with the hope of making recommendations to other Native groups in Canada or anywhere else, that is that the one thing which was not included in ANCSA, and I feel that it should have been, but of course, as was stated before, there were a lot of things that were done in haste, and the whole idea of housing in America is very critical at this point, because the whole notion of individuals, of people just going out there and doing on their own, like Horatio Alger, the individual trip is coming to an end. We've taken that to the max. And now it's time for people to start thinking of group cooperation, of unity. And you know, President Reagan was mentioning about families, and that's it. The Alaska Native people used to survive in family groups, in extended family groups, and a part of this assimilation period, it's important to maintain that family, that extended family group, because that's the tie, that's a connection, that's a part of the Native way of life, is that interaction. And to make a good transition, that's what people need. But going back to the housing, it is a very important part of how people live. And so that's the one thing that was omitted in the Land Claims Act. And I'm kind of glad it was, in a way. But I think there has to be a big change across Alaska and America and wherever else they have land claims. And I thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
My name is John F. Moses. I spoke earlier this morning and got a chance to think about a few more items I'd like to place on record. First of all, I'm taking a class at the Alaska Native the Native Leadership Program here on the campus, and one of the people that we had a videotape was Ramsey Clark. I'd like to quote something that he said and also refer in my own words of what I think about the words he said. We knew we wanted something bold, new, and something different and possible, something that would really give Native people the power to maintain their nativeness, their Native way, with the economic viability to as they chose. If I could relate that quote from Ramsey Clark, the first wording, we knew we wanted something bold and new. We may be or can refer to the preparing workings of natives, the Native leaders before the passage of the Act. Something different and possible would refer to the leading up to the passage of ANSCA, which was different in any way it was written for the corporations within Alaska and was possible because it became an act. I respect Mr. Clark because he respects the natives and realized making up the state. The character he was speaking about is knowing who you are, and I believe we do know who we are, our identity, culture, heritage. Came from experience. The experience was in the Native people, and that they are one that told us it's the land. The Native people of the place, a chance to choose from all that they had, land they wanted the most, to preserve it, to live on it, and with it. He spoke of afterborns and the land, and during his speech I remembered something to the effect that, quote, so remember that no generation is wise enough to make all the decisions of the generations in the future, and none should be ironic enough to want to, but to find a formula now including the future. I believe Mr. Clark sums the speech as to the effect sometimes that would really give Native people the power to maintain their nativeness in their native way with the economic viability and preserve nativeness. Toward its elders, toward its corporations, towards the land, toward its culture and native values. The nativeness is character. Nativeness of unity that is in the strength and culture values and perseverance. I'd like to go back toward the early 50s or late 50s when I was growing up, where the map used to be white, just a plain sheet of paper. And as in the late 50s, it started having colors after the passage of the Statute Act. In 71, after the ANSCA passed, it started having more colors, representing the state, the federal government, the wildlife refuges, native lands after the selection in 1974. Then it was really colored. Since the passage of the Act, the native corporations had only 4 years to select their lands, and which was done by the native corporations, except for the BLM conveying the land to the corporations is fairly slow. I believe that the native people with the knowledge and the education that surrounds them could and would find ways to solve some problems toward 1991. I believe personally that 1991 is every day and working to that date. You asked this morning about what employment the original corporations in the state. I'm from Chalista Corporation. I would like to give you a few things that happened in Chalista since the passage of the Act and the employment in our region, which is composed of 13,000 people and a large portion of the land. Within the Chalista Corporation, we have 10 administrative units based on the villages. And 13 board of directors. Chalista Corporation has a Chalista Construction Company, Inc. and does work in completing a Bethel Petroleum dock, 30 units of condominiums, recreational center at Settlers Bay. Chalista also has Chalista Fisheries, Inc. Chalista Imanac Fisheries Joint Venture formed Chalista Fisheries, Inc. and with the Imanac Village Corporation. Through the Chalista International Corporation, Chalista imports and export subsidiary entire catch in 1983 of Chalista Imanac Fisheries, pre-sold to the Japanese. In 1983, Chalista Western Inc., a joint venture formed a Chalista Fishery Inc. and a Western Pioneer Inc., which transports operation out of Seattle. Chalista also has Chalista International Corporation, was established in April of 83, an export-import subsidiary of Chalista, and derive maximum profit from the business opportunities in Alaska and the lower 48 and the Pacific Rim countries. Offices were also established in Anchorage, Seattle, and Tokyo. Three locations. These three locations provide access to markets in Alaska and the lower 48, and also sources to supply in the Far East. Chalista also has a Settlers Bay properties. Settlers Bay Real Estate Company, Settlers Bay Construction Company. Chalista also has a Professional Services, Inc., which formed to provide contract services and consulting services. Chalista also developed Sheraton Anchorage Hotel. Calista also has a business investment corporation. Calista's venture and capital subsidiary was licensed in April of 83, a minority enterprise small business investment corporation under the United States Small Business Administration, and have set up trading posts in Aniak and also in Bethel. Calista also has an investment corporation with Safeco Title Insurance. Calista also has Land and Resource Department in Anchorage, which employs people. I think the act that started the regional corporation, for instance, for Calista, have provided jobs for the economic and social change of the people in our area. This morning we heard earlier that the various corporations were doing so well. I think that the corporations in the state of Alaska are doing pretty well. I've heard a speaker once state that after the passage of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, the state, 11% of the economic for the state of Alaska comes from the regional corporations that were formed under ANSCA. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moses.
William Silas, Eagle Village. And this is just some views that I want to offer this board as far as what I think the cause and the effects of the Alaska Native Land Claims Act. And I'll start off by saying that the Alaska Native Land Claims Act, it is a disease called greed. It's not the villagers who are greedy, it's the outside interests who want our land. It is a corporate and paper society that we now live in. The state's refusals to recognize sovereignty of Alaska Natives is a violation of human rights, almost on a parallel with the Palestinian homeland issue for land. We are slowly being displaced by legal fiction that the state draws up and is subject to interpretation. The state and the federal government has tried to give us some land that we already had, and the church tried to give us a religion we already had. And this has been going on for too long. And so I'd just like to finish by saying that sovereignty is a state of mind, yet the state is of the notion we want power, but it is a relationship with the land that we want. That's what we keep.
Thank you, sir. This must be a Anne's class arrival. Well, I think we'll take a 5-minute break and then we'll start again once the class that's just arrived has been seated. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's good. I was going to tell my students the attendance slips are over there on the table and get credit for being here.
Whatever, and fine. Forms, and we can you pick them up, and then we can let Anne come out of hiding. stay within the rules and...
Yeah, go ahead.
Just want to thank Justice Berger for his indulgence of this classroom exercise and to remind you all, first of all, make sure that you get credit for attending today by filling out an attendance slip and giving it to me before you leave. And to, I need your journals by Friday. You can hand them in now or you can bring them by my office. I've got a box here to put them in if anyone wants to turn in their journal today. A couple of students in the class have already testified, but I think Justice Berger will start out by explaining what's going on here, and then those of you who want to testify or have your chance.
Right, thanks. I'll just call our meeting to order. This is the Alaska Native Review Commission, and my name is Tom Berger, and I've been appointed by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, which is an international organization of Eskimos, and the World Council of Indigenous Peoples, which represents Indians and other indigenous peoples in many countries. And they've asked me to come here and to hold meetings all over Alaska, in villages throughout Alaska and in urban centers like Fairbanks, so that Alaskan natives and other Alaskans can discuss with me the impact of ANCSA, the way in which, to your knowledge, ANCSA has worked out, what the good things are about it, the things that you have complaints about. What about 1991, the transferability of shares, taxation of land? What about the question whether or not the children born since 1971 should participate in the settlement? What about Native sovereignty and Native government? All of these questions that relate to the future of Alaska Natives, questions that I know touch your deepest concerns and those of Alaska Natives all over the state, that's what we want to hear about. We've been holding meetings in villages around Alaska. We've had some meetings at Anchorage as well to listen to Native leaders from Alaska, from the lower 48, and from other countries talk about how in Alaska, in the lower 48, in Canada, Greenland, Australia, how Native people are grappling with the same issues that you have here in Alaska. That is, these broad questions of how land is to be preserved and maintained, subsistence, families, and the future, these broad questions of Native land and government. So, since we want to hear from you and not from me, I won't say any more than that, but invite you to come up and speak. Just take a seat at the microphones here, and it's all very informal, and we'll just discuss the subject as we go along. Everything that you say is going to be recorded by Jim Sykes here and then typed up and a transcript prepared, and there will be a permanent record of all that is said at these hearings and these meetings. And on the basis of that permanent record of the testimony, I will prepare a report next year in which I will set out my findings, but they will be based on what Alaska Natives and Alaskans generally have told me at these hearings and meetings that will be continuing throughout the rest of 1984. And we will be sending a set of the transcripts here to the university, and my report will also be available. The transcript should be available within a week or two. The report, of course, is one that will be available in the summer of 1985. So that's why we're here, to see if we can begin to sort out some of these difficult questions, and with that, please feel free to come forward. There's some more seats around here, Mr. Luke and others. We've had quite a few students speak already today, and it's always a bit of a question who's going to be first, but somebody's got to be. Someone asked me earlier if I was going to coax and cajole people to come up, and I said, no, I'll just wait them out. So let's hope it works. Yeah, good for you. How do you do?
Nice to meet you.
I don't have anything formally prepared, but I'm glad to have this opportunity to be able to say something about some of the issues surrounding the Land Claim Settlement Act and 1991. I'm Kathy Attock. I was born and raised in Barrow. And what I have to say will reflect the way that I grew up and what my feelings about the land claims were in 1971. When the Land Claims Act was passed, I was a junior or senior in high school. And I remember going to the convention because the Alaska Federation of Natives at that time, as they are now, was real active in involving the young people in the state to become knowledgeable about the land claims. And we had an organization down in Mount Edgecombe where there's a real good cross-section of Alaska Natives from all over the state. And we had an organization much like that of the Alaska Federation of Natives in that we had representatives from each region. So there was a few of us that were fortunate enough to be able to go to the convention in 1971. And I felt some of the expectations, the high expectations and hopes that people had. And I saw the way that a lot of the Native leadership worked so hard in trying to help get a settlement before Congress ended their session. My viewpoints also reflect are part of my experiences from working with real closely with the elders in transcribing and translating a lot of their tapes and what they said and what they believe in and the ways that we should live and what we should learn and what we should be teaching our children. As far as the land claims and the expectations that I experienced was that it it has been, I think, for the most part, been a real good economic and political tool for the Alaskan Natives to operate through. But at the same time, I wonder why Congress had to delegate exactly what we had to do with our land, because everybody's different. Every group is different all over the state. And my strongest feeling is that people, if they're going to be offered self-determination to be able to govern themselves and to make decisions, should be able to decide what they're going to do with their land. And in a community such as Barrow, where I grew up in, the people in Barrow, our parents, and even some of our grandparents were real strong in believing in self-government and had a strong council and all of those things. And to me, I wonder, you know, why couldn't they have made decisions about what to do with their land? And the way that I see it right now and the experience that I've had with the land claims is that it seemed to create another infrastructure that we have to live under and are, you know, in a way kind of forced to live under so many different types of governments. You know, you have the city council, then you have the IRA, the village council, and then you, on top of that, you have the regional corporation, the village corporation, and with us we have the North Slope Borough. So, and it leaves a lot of people very confused. I remember one time, it really struck me how funny it was that we have a purpose. We were given a purpose in getting a land settlement to be able to decide what to do with our land and self-determination and all this stuff. And one of the villages up north was complaining about this oil rig or the drilling going on right by their village, which was going to be affecting their fishing. So they were very concerned at the time that the major oil companies were starting to come up to the North Slope, like ARCO and Sohio and all of those companies. And it turned out that the people that were drilling were from the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, our own corporation. So one of the feelings that I have against the land claims is that it created a lot of conflict between people. There's too much power play, too much politics instead of really addressing the real needs that the people have, especially at the village level. Another area that I'd like to speak up about is the big concern, I guess, to me it seems like it is one of the biggest concerns in one of the wrong things in the land claims was how it didn't have anything to address the children born after 1971. And I have no real solutions or anything to that, but I'm glad to see that AFN is looking at these issues, and especially this one. And on sovereignty and self-government, I have always respected the way, even though when I was younger, I didn't agree with the way that we had to live under a different government and all that stuff, but I think we're pretty lucky, we're pretty fortunate to have people that can listen to us and to work for common interest and come to some type of a solution. I believe in tribal sovereignty and self-government and being familiar with and being within the scope of the Inuit Circumpolar Conference. I think it's only right that people expect to be treated equally as a distinct group of people with a long history of self-government, and that they should have the right to handle all of their affairs to the fullest extent possible. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Do you want that last name spelled? Ms. Attock, could you spell your last name for us?
I-T-T-A.
I-T-T-A. That's what I thought.
My name's Willie Templeton. I come from Anchorage. I'm an at-large shareholder with Cook Inlet Region. I was hoping to have something prepared, but I really don't have anything prepared. But I thought maybe I would just talk about what it is my perception as being an at-large shareholder in Siri.